For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. For new people, I'm Taigen Layton, the teacher here at Ancient Dragon Zengate. As Laurel mentioned, we just finished our annual two-month practice period yesterday. I'm very happy that Kazan Titus O'Brien, priest here at Ancient Dragon Zengate, will be giving a talk tonight. Kazan now lives in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where he leads our affiliate Sangha, Valley Dragon Sangha, but he came for the last 2 months to Chicago to Ancient Dragon to be head monk for the Oshuso for the practice period, which ended yesterday, and he's going back to Albuquerque tomorrow, but he agreed to give one last talk tonight. So thank you very much, Kazan.
Taigen's getting all the work out of me he can, which I'm happy to fulfill. It's actually, as ever, a really great honor to be speaking to you all, and increasing number of people keep mentioning listening to these talks online. So that's interesting. So I never think about that. I'm always just here doing it, but suddenly that's in my awareness a little bit. So we might actually have to pause this. So in a minute, I hope that you might indulge me if I come around a little bit and make some postural suggestions. Maybe we can all assume our best Zazen postures, because that's what I want to talk about tonight, is really the physical aspect of Zazen, which is always in the forefront, but we don't always necessarily talk about it that explicitly, but I think that can be useful to do once in a while, and that's something that maybe, you know, I can offer tonight. So Taigen doesn't have to talk about it again for a while. So I requested that we chant the Song of the Grass Hut. It's a great teaching from our ancestor Shuto. And there's that wonderful line in there that's so resonant, which is, if you want to know the undying person in the hut, simply don't separate from this skin bag here and now. So the skin bag, this is our somatic physical expression in this Saha realm. And as you probably noticed, after 35 minutes of silent sitting, it's a very physical practice. And our group in Albuquerque, we actually sit at a yoga studio, a wonderful yoga studio called Dragonfly Yoga, and they very generously provide the space to us free of charge. We make an occasional donation, but there's a recognition by the studio kind of directors that having some people regularly bringing this practice of Zazen or just simple sitting benefits the whole community. I think they really recognize this as a community benefit. And that's, I think, a demonstration of the depth of their yoga practice. So, of course, what we do is yoga as well. But as I kind of jokingly say, we just have one posture. Now, of course, that's not true. We have a lot of postures. Our Zazen extends into many activities and, in fact, extends into our whole life. Another text I want to talk about, touch on tonight, is the Fukan Zazengi, a universal recognition or universal recommendation for the practice of Zazen, which is, I believe, the first essay our founder, Ehe Dogen, crafted after his return from China, when he was presenting this new formulation of Buddhist practice to, you know, the nation of Japan in the 13th century. And he gives some explicit physical instructions in that as well, which that text you can find in our chant book as well. It's a little bit long, so I didn't want to subject you to that tonight. So just this one line, though, from the Song of the Grass Hut about not separating from our bodies, not separating, not disassociating from our physical expression. This can be very challenging for us. So the Fukanza Zengi, let me just read you the little bit of this. I'm actually going to skip about two-thirds of the way through it. It fills one full page. It's quite short. But basically, you could practice an entire lifetime of Zen, Zazen practice from this one formulation. It's all in there. Pretty extraordinary in that respect. I think that's also true for the Song of the Grass Hut. But Dogen gets quite explicit, and thankfully so, and he gets into the nitty-gritty. I'm often struck by his instructions in that we're doing this today. Taigen has been talking about beginning to emphasize or underscore a little bit more of the ancestral aspect of our practice and how we're carrying this forward. This is often really apparent to me. Listen to this. At your sitting place, meaning a sitting place, let's say, in your home, you have a little place where you have a small altar, a place that you carve out for this practice. At your sitting place, spread out a thick mat and put a cushion on it. Sit either in the full or half lotus position. In the full lotus position, first place your right foot on your left thigh, then your left foot on your right thigh. In the half lotus, simply place your left foot on your right thigh. Tie your robes loosely and arrange them neatly. Then place your right hand on your left leg and your left hand on your right palm, thumb tips lightly touching. Straighten your body and sit upright, leaning neither left nor right, neither forward nor backward. Align your ears with your shoulders and your nose with your navel. Rest the tip of your tongue against the front of the roof of your mouth, with teeth and lips together both shut. Always keep your eyes open and breathe softly through your nose. Once you have adjusted your posture, take a breath and exhale fully. Rock your body right and left and settle into steady, immovable sitting. Think of not thinking. Not thinking. What kind of thinking is that? Beyond thinking. This is the essential art of Zazen. Very simple, but actually quite nuanced. So in this investigation and expression, Zazen, as an artist, I'm trained as an artist, I function as an artist in the world sometimes, and early on in my career, I did what has come to be termed performance art. But I found that a fairly dissatisfying experience. And somehow I wanted my body to be involved, but I didn't want to be making it up. And I encountered Zen, but kind of a different tradition that really didn't emphasize the sitting as much. We did a lot of it, but the details were not really discussed. So I think Dogen's emphasis on these details and the kind of repeated underscoring of the importance of this Zazen practice is very instructive. I don't take it lightly that those descriptions, that occupies fully one-third of his initial explication of the practice, the rest of it seeming more maybe esoteric, but it's embodied in this posture. So he talks about the full lotus, which is really wonderful. I actually sat full lotus for the first time in a while because I've been doing so much sitting here through the practice period that, as well as kind of a little bit more yoga than I had been doing, so I had a little more flexibility in my hips. So for a practice of Zazen, I was able to get my legs into that pretzel posture, which is not magically powerful in and of itself. Although there are some aspects, we have at least one Chinese medical doctor, traditional Chinese medical doctor in the house tonight, an acupuncturist, Tom. So he could maybe speak to this, but I've heard it said that having the legs pressing on the insides of the thighs actually activates healing energy for the liver, liver channels. Is that true, Tom? The insides of the thighs?
You know, I wouldn't think of it as particularly potent.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't get discussed. And it's interesting, and I wanted to touch on this too, that these things don't get discussed in the Zen texts, and I think there's for a reason. It doesn't say do these things because it will have these benefits for your health. But I do think there are benefits for our health, both mental, emotional, physical. But anyway, so having the legs put in that posture, in that full lotus, does an extraordinary thing where it sort of just opens up everything. Suddenly your back is in the right position and your belly is kind of open. Your hands actually rest on your heels very naturally, so your hands are in the right position. So that all just happens very naturally in full. I'm in half lotus right now. It's also that also functions about the same. I, per his instructions, I sat with my left foot on my right thigh because full lotus wasn't so available. I did half lotus and kind of ended up with some tendonitis in the outside of my left ankle for many years of doing that. So I've been switching now and doing my right side and getting my right hip loosened up more. So, you know, we have to attend to these things too. Our bodies change. We have injuries. Things occur. Sometimes even sitting cross-legged is not available. So he also says in Fukan's Zengi, let me just turn back to it here. Have no designs on becoming a Buddha. How could that be limited to sitting or lying down? So how can our Zazen practice be limited? How can our liberation from our suffering, from our confusion, our greed, our anger, our ignorance, how can our liberation from that be dependent on what posture we assume, whether it's sitting or lying down? So it doesn't depend. But we really emphasize this Zazen posture as a kind of template or a model in which we're allowed to deeply investigate our experience. So Taigen yesterday was speaking and encouraging people to settle, go deeper, sink. I think that's what he said, or go deeper, deeper, lower, lower, settle. And through this, through taking this practice and really investigating it over time and sticking with it, staying with the skin bag, not separating, bringing the attention back. Dogen, he says to keep the eyes open. We always keep our eyes open. We always, we keep this uprightness. And through this attentiveness to these details of our posture, we keep steering our attention back into the body. And as Taigen's teacher, Tenshin Reb Anderson, once said, he said, every incomplete breath produces a ghost. That's very deep. Those ghosts, those hungry ghosts that wander off in our lack of attention, they start to come back to us in Zazen, which is a very wonderful opportunity for a homecoming. But we want to be available for that. And so we want to really stay in our postures, in our bodies. So we keep coming back to, well, the thing I was going to say too, starting with this foundation of having the legs folded, to have the knees where you're able to touch is good for, like I was saying, it allows the spine to have this natural uprightness. It provides this foundation. So it's really, so I've been having these kind of experiences almost of the body as like a stupa. We build the original stupa, the original temple, the original zendo is this skin bag. And this extraordinary, we're unique creatures on this planet for our the way we're structured and how we relate to gravity. It's very interesting, and we're investigating this, whether we realize it or not. As we're in our posture, we're investigating our relationship with gravity. So this foundation that we build with our legs, now again, we can be kneeling, we can be sitting in a chair, and in any case, we're very aware of our sit bones. So we become very aware of what gets called our sit bones in yoga. So that kind of, the points at the base of the pelvis upon which we are balanced in zazen, actually, along with our knees. So we're forming a tripod. And really, our body kind of ends up forming like a pyramid. And this pyramidal stupa that is our skin bag. Skin bag kind of implies this kind of maybe slumpy, you know, bag of mush. But actually, there's a real... we've got bones in here. And they're all moving around and adjusting all the time, responding to our breath, responding to our thoughts and our ideas. So why do we separate? Why do we disassociate? Oftentimes, there's good reason for it. We've been traumatized. We've been, I was thinking of the word insulted today. We've been insulted. We've been insulted by toxins in the atmosphere. Our bodies have been insulted. We insult ourselves with some of our wraps in our head. That word insult, you know, we think of it as just kind of somebody saying something nasty at you or vice versa. But it has a bigger, broader meaning. So I think of our practice as a healing practice. And if we're going to emphasize, you know, it's a living question. Why do we sit as much as we do? Why do we spend days at a time? Some of us just spent the better part of 3 days sitting in this little room, just doing this. So we do, why is there such an emphasis on so much of this sitting? And we don't even sit that much compared to some of these, you know, fanatics out there. So what is it what is the reward, if there is one, from this deep investigation and expression of this zazen practice? Well, I'm touching on it. These aspects of ourselves can return, and they can be incorporated and integrated. Settle. One of the experiences that we often have when we sit for extended periods of time is physical discomfort. I often think that we really get to learn the ways in which we are incorrectly, or maybe correct isn't the right word, inefficiently moving through the world, disharmoniously. Working with our bodies, you know. And in fact, our socioeconomic circumstances often demand that we have to insult our bodies and minds in order to survive. So Zazen becomes a way in which we can start to correct and free up energy that is locked in the body-mind, I don't know, from these insults, from past trauma. The breath starts to enter into those places in the body, and that energy starts to get freed up. Sometimes it looks like memories that emerge in Zazen. Sometimes it feels like pain. Sometimes it feels like bliss. Sometimes it feels like heat. Sometimes it feels like cold. Sometimes it feels stuck. Sometimes it feels active. You know what I mean? So these are the things that we're experiencing, that something is experiencing, that is being experienced, that we get to, through the gift of a space like this and an opportunity like this and in a tradition like this, we get to go very, very deep into this somatic embodied experience and see what's there. So at this, maybe this is a good moment where we can pause this recording, and if you don't care to have me disturb, to harsh on your mellow, as I come around, just put your hands in gassho, and I will just happily gassho back and keep going. But otherwise, I'll just make some postural suggestions. They're just suggestions because I don't know what's going on. I can't know what's going on for you. But I have very many, many times in both Zen and yoga and Tai Chi, just to say a word, that I began practicing martial arts as a young kid and have off and on practiced martial arts my whole life and yoga and, Taekwondo, Kung Fu, Jiu-Jitsu, Aikido. My favorite was Tai Chi. I studied Tai Chi most seriously for many years. And this still, to this day, really informs my practice. So I'll say some more things maybe about that if there's time in a minute. But right now, let me just go around and make some suggestions. This is a suggestion I got from a book about some Soto Zen teachers in Japan. Somebody who was in that book was saying that they had practiced Zazen in front of a mirror for an extended, period of time, wherein they would notice that as their thoughts drifted, they would open their eyes and look in the mirror, and they would see how their posture had registered the distraction. And I practiced with this too. It can be quite useful. So this thing about pressing up from the top of the head and then pressing back at the back of the head a little bit. Now, that can be too extreme, right? But you can kind of do that, and you might find a lot of... Taigen's teacher, Tenshin Anderson, he in a sesshin once... I mean, I try pretty hard sometimes to have good posture. In fact, I've had to work with that, maybe trying too hard. I knew he was behind me and he was coming around, so I was really, and then he just touched the top of my head. I don't think he said anything, but there was a sense that he was lifting me up, and it felt like he found inches. And I talked to him about that later. He's like, yeah, sometimes I'm amazed, especially with taller men. I'll find inches and inches. It's like they're going to go forever. So I think we can find more lift, but we don't want to be, creating stress in the body. We don't want to be Marines, right? So I often will do that when I give Zazen instruction. I'll say, okay, everybody slump. All right, now do the Marine. I had an uncle who was a Marine, so I have pictures of him where he was a drill sergeant with the sword, and they got the cap brim, So that's the other extreme. Deshimaru Roshi in Europe, he used to point out Rodin's Thinker as the opposite of Zazen. Because that's thinking. We're thinking not thinking. So, you know, there's something very profound in this posture. And it's of such a deep topic, I feel like I could keep going. A couple things I wanted to point out. Keep those elbows floated out. This is, again, the energetic component, the Tai Chi component. The Chi wants to flow. I guess it's like in Dune, the spice wants to flow. But in Zazen, the Chi wants to flow. So it comes up our... There's a Qigong exercise where you can kind of... Again, another big topic. But we can breathe up the spine and actually can come through that big joint at the back of the shoulders and then out through the arms and and the chi circles through our arms. Maybe my all-time favorite Zazen instruction about what to do with your mind is to place it in your left palm. I practiced for many years in a kind of Zen that was like, put the tension in the hara. Put the mind in the hara, and you. I actually ended up with chi stagnation in my abdomen, and it created some problems. I had to get acupuncture to fix. So placing the mind in the left palm—that's a really, really—I just love that. It place the mind gently in the left palm. So that's something that I often bring my when I've drifted. I'll come. Okay, put my mind in the left palm, touching the tongue lightly to the roof of the mouth. Keeping the teeth just lightly touching or slightly separated. Again, that the tongue touching actually completes an energy circuit in the body. So this has a root in Chinese medicine as well, or yoga. So time for questions? So these are just some things to play with and work with and think about and investigate and explore. And it's in... That's why I've made a couple references here. I have pages here of little notes from Hongzhi that we've been studying for 2 months that I didn't even get to. But it's in there. This stuff is in there. If you start to look for it, you can get these quite embodied physical, postural suggestions that we then release completely and just soar freely or sink deeply into in Zazen and let go of. We let go of our body and mind. So, now that we've done all that, let's let it go. And any questions or comments? Yeah?
I don't know if the perspective would be of interest, but in the Taoist understanding of posture, the half lotus is a more triangular posture, mm-hmm. and it's a more yin posture, mm-hmm. more feminine. Mm-hmm. And then the full lotus is more square. It's more contained.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's... more
nasty.
Yeah.
You definitely feel strength in that full lotus posture.
It structures the perineum.
Mm-hmm.
It supplies potential for that chi circulation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just on that note, there is another thing that when you're... I like to do this at the beginning of my Zazen, do the kind of real lift and press to get that. And then you kind of go back and forth, find that center. There's a Taoist suggestion about the three locks in the body. So really sort of clenching the perineum. I think they call those kegels. But clench the perineum. Actually, this is on the in-breath. Breathe in, clench the perineum. Actually draw in the abdomen slightly. And then kind of draw back that chin as you're doing that lift. And then on the out-breath, just let that all go. And do that a couple of times. It kind of gets the energy balancing and moving on its own. This is important to do maybe at the beginning and then let it go. Maybe check in with it occasionally, but I let those go. That's not the point. It's important that's not the point. Any other questions or comments? Was that helpful for anybody, the postural suggestions? Sometimes we don't know. We're maybe leaning. And even if we can keep getting corrected and we still go back. But over time, Taigen, is that true? Do you see people straighten up? Do you see them straighten out? Sometimes. Yeah, but crooked sitting is good too. It's fine.
We all have, curved spines.
Yeah.
So, I know I have a tendency
I know some people, you know, Paul Howard's psychotherapy means, but it's just the natural, mm-hmm. you know, it's natural for some people to, it's not, but it's, we each have our own, so there's not like one right mold. But, you know, I'll sometimes go around and just make suggestions like this. Not as often as I used to, but it's not that there's a right, exactly right posture, but you have to find what feels upright to you. And all the suggestions you're making, they're very useful. I didn't thought or if I'd ever even heard the thing about the lift from the back of the head and when you said that, good.
You know,
yay.
It's great to be touched when those instructions are given, because I find that touch is very memorable.
Yeah, I found that to be true too. Like that time, I'm still carrying that lift I got from Reb Anderson, I think. He uplifted me, and I'm still feeling uplifted.
Yeah, when I started sitting, I used to go around with a stick and hit people on the shoulder.
Yeah, I had some of that.
It's, you know, and that was actually it opened up something. But the sound was harsh for people listening. But I don't do that now. But I sometimes go around and massage shoulders, which is kind of the same thing as the stick in a way.
Yeah. Gershon.
So for the last 3 or 4 years, I've been doing a lot of walking in Zazen, and posture is really important in that too. It took me a long time to figure out my gait and my upright. I mean, you're still upright, and your head and your face and your arms are all really important. But it was exactly what you said. You just have to find. So,
Gyushin practices Tai Chi quite seriously as well, and that reminds me about how important those aspects are in our Kinhin, you know, in our walking practice, which is really, I consider it a Qigong exercise. It's stepping very slowly, coordinated with breath. You really get to investigate, where are my feet? Where's my balance on my feet? In Tai Chi, they talk about there being really four corners on the feet. So you get to see. I've actually been working, because I noticed when I was a teenager, as many of us have, you see, I know of a Chinese doctor who can diagnose, this is some time ago, but that I read about him, that he could diagnose people from their shoes. He could look at their shoes and the wear patterns, and that's how he diagnosed people. So I noticed, for me, the outsides of my heels would get really worn down in my shoes. It was really bad when I was a teenager, and it's gotten better and better. And I pay attention to that, and when I'm walking, I notice if I'm more distracted, I'm rolled out on my heels a little bit. And then as I bring more attention to it, and I notice it goes right up into my hips, which extends up through my torso. So if any of us do yoga, really Zazen is all about core. It's all about this kind of attention to core and core strength too. It's very nuanced. It's beautifully nuanced practice for a lifetime. And it's so simple, but so subtle. Yeah. So many things to explore. Yeah.
Thank you, Kizan. Any last comments? Questions?
Yeah.
Yes,
oh, yeah, Michael.
Michael, then.
Is fear really the mind killer?
Is fear really the mind killer? Sometimes. Yeah, sometimes. That's a quote from Dune for you non-nerds. Can you recite the mantra, the whole thing? Fear is the mind killer, I must not, whatever it is.
No.
I can't remember it either. Yeah, I just, last year I read all the books, the six original books, I got them all on my Kindle, and for 6 months that's all I read was Dune. Yeah. The books are better. But good question. Yeah, Matt.
So I have kids that in my class, they come in and they have pretty severe disabilities. And sitting, you know, this is a physical practice, and some of them, you know, they're in a wheelchair all day long. And some of them, they have these special things where they, it's almost like a standing wheelchair where they stretch them out and you can just stand up and they have them walk because they're sitting for so long.
Mm.
Or like they have these things where they have to like push them over here. And so I've been wondering, like, how would you teach them?
Well, a couple things to say about that real quickly. I think this is a great question, and it touches on some stuff that I wanted to get to, but, you know, time's always tight.
Next practice
yeah. period. There's a wonderful quote from Chuangzi where he's quoting this Taoist master who's saying, you know, he's afflicted with some disease, so his posture's really bad, and somebody's like, how can you be, basically the question is like, you're a mess. How can, and you're a Taoist. How can you, your chi's all messed up, dude. How can you become immortal? And he's like, I just go with the Tao. If the Tao turns me into a knot and turns my, you know, my left arm into a chicken wing and my right leg, I don't know if anybody remembers this. I can't remember the whole quote, but he's just talking about if the Tao just turns me into a knot, then I'll just be a knot. I go with the mother, with the Tao. The word matter and the word mother are the same word. It's the same root. So again, this investigation of gravity. So it makes me think of Feldenkrais, Moshe Feldenkrais, who did extraordinary, miraculous things with kids with cerebral palsy, who that had never walked without braces or whatever. And he just, he was a nuclear engineer, first judo master outside of Japan. He was this incredible polymath who learned about his body because he was told he wouldn't be able to walk after a knee surgery. So he taught himself about the body. And really a lot of it involves working with the feet, pressing into the feet in order to recreate the sense of balance on the feet that gets lost for whatever reason. I think that's true in our Zazen too. It's all about gravity. It's all about balance. It's all about working with the mother matter, you know. But each thing is a perfect expression as it is. But and then the question becomes like Suzuki Rishi, how do we maybe make some positive adjustments, suggestions? Big topic. We could keep going.
Okay. You have last question.
Last word.
It's a similar question, I think, but from a slightly different perspective, that I think there are all kinds of wonderful ways to work with the precepts and that sort of thing throughout, like, making life a practice. But I was wondering if you had suggestions for ways of working the posture in the rest of daily life, because I feel like I get kind of sort of locked in, and then I try to do a lot of zazen and then kind of trying to pull that apart.
One thing, I try not to use the word try. That's the thing for me. It's a useful word, but I heard in that, you know, I'm trying this and then it's off, and so I'm trying more zazen. I think we all understand that sentiment. So backing off is really important. Backing off the edge, you know. Find one. It's like this thing with the posture. Find what's the extreme version and then back it off. About 20%. And so in our whole life, in traffic, with our work, if we can just find where that, this is a, you know, common yoga instruction, find the edge and then back off of it. Some days you get permission to really go, the other leg goes up into full lotus, you know, your body is singing. You know, sometimes that's available and sometimes it's not. So we have to listen. And that listening is kanzeon. That listening is our vow, is our vow to live by vow. So I'm glad that you brought up ethics, and it extends throughout all this. So just keep asking that question. That's the most important part. So, yeah, good question. Thank you.